Welcome to the Productivity Podcast. Delighted today to be joined by Caroline Mumby, who's director at Elidex and also working on an exciting project as project lead for the Shine project, which we'll find out about a little bit more. Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much, Simon. I'm great. And thank you really for inviting me. I've been looking forward to this.
No, you're more than welcome. So before we dive into our conversation today, be good to find out a little bit more about you and the Shine project as well that you're currently working on.
Yeah, okay. Well, I came to this project really through the Shine project, which is all about measuring the team's predisposition, if you like, to agility. I came to this just because I was looking for a tool that could actually help us solve that problem. And where I came from was more of an HR background, and as a lawyer before that, a barrister, employment lawyer, focusing more on compliance, of course, and being very focused in the background, in my background, on more to do with outcomes. So that's really, as a lawyer, I've been focused on outcomes, and then getting more and more interested in the HR side because, of course, law is all about black and white and people are not. So when advising clients, I was always finding myself in the situation where I needed to think about the people aspect. And that's where you get into the grey side of things, where you need to start thinking about context. And that was fascinating to me. So I started studying HR in more depth and became a member of the CIPD, etc. And of course, that's your go-to position. And then from there, my business, which focuses on HR portals and anything to do with helping people close the compliance loop on HR, so anything from contracts of employment through to personnel records, GDPR, all that kind of good stuff, started to get interested in the what you might call more the more advanced areas of HR, which are to do with the performance management and reward and so forth. And then realized that really that wasn't the right context for it. We should really look at a different platform altogether, because we were starting to mix the two things, and basically my clients were getting quite confused because they didn't come to us for that kind of thing originally. They came to us to close compliance loops. So we decided to set about a separate system which we could really call a people focused system. And I'm not really that keen on the name HR because it means human resources. And I believe that people are an end in themselves. They're not actually a resource. And being happy at work is absolutely critical. So I came all that way around it and realized that for me, during the pandemic, agility was key. I think it is for a lot of businesses, and certainly for the resilient ones, which are looking to reset during this period, which has been brought as many opportunities as it has disadvantages and risks. The opportunities are there, but they need something that can move fast. They need a system that can move fast for them and a methodology that they can follow. So I got heavily into that, into Agile, realized that we needed the OKRs to give it a context and make sense of it all. Otherwise, you're just busy fools. And so that's where I came around to looking for a system that could help us identify whether or not teams that were working remotely were actually being agile, predisposed to agility, I think is a better way of putting it. I can't tell you whether your teams are agile or not. I can tell you whether or not they can be agile because they behave like agile teams. And then, of course, a lot comes down to the resources you give them and the environment that they work in. But it's very difficult for teams to start, for managers to trust agile teams working remotely if they don't have any data to look at. So that's the background. I know that's probably a bit longer than you were asking for, but hopefully that's got that's whet the appetite for people to listen to a bit more about it.
Yeah, no, sets the scene really well. And a couple of things there. I think the grey and the black and white is very interesting. Some people live in a very black and white world, don't they, and need definitives. Other people are happy to, I suppose, meander through the grayness of never quite knowing, and different situations lead to people behaving in different ways. So for those that might not be familiar with what you mean by agile teams, maybe just give us a little bit more depth in terms of what you mean by that.
Yes. Well, obviously, there's a whole raft of work on what agile teams are and what makes them agile. But there are certain criteria which you just absolutely have to have in an agile team, I think. And you've got to start with a hypothesis. I mean, Shine is it uses inductive reasoning. So we start with specific observations and then we move to broad generalizations. And so what we started with was saying, look, we need teams that demonstrate continuous improvement, or, you know, the ability to continuously improve, the ability for self-improvement, that they're open to it, that they're interested in it, and that they can collaborate as a team, that they're good at planning, and, of course, implementation, delivery, productivity, your world. Simon, I realize I've just finished there, right in the middle of your
good
patch.
There, that's right.
Productivity. So yes, that's we need those things. What Shine does, it actually assesses and measures collective team agility. So it's not about the individual. You know, we're not saying pointing fingers and saying, oh, this person isn't agile enough, or this person isn't doing enough planning or enough delivery or enough execution of tasks. It's the team together, and that's what that's the beauty of it. That's why we measure it in real time during real live events, agile events. So we conduct them on whiteboards, so that online whiteboards, so that we can collect the data.
Amazing. No, that makes perfect sense. And you've touched on there in terms of the last 12 months have been catastrophic for the world pretty much, but actually also create this kind of environment for innovation. And we've seen lots of examples across the world. If we take retail, for example, of businesses starting to be able to do click and collect or deliver to home within days, things that have been on their strategic plan for years. So in your work with kind of large, medium businesses, what challenges have you seen them kind of having to deal with from a HR, people, performance management issue? And has that been different in the last 12 months, or has it remained relatively consistent?
Well, I think that one of the biggest challenges has been that there is so much innovation going on now that really it's difficult to wake up in the morning and go through your entire day without being, you know, assaulted, if you like, by innovation. I almost feel as though there isn't time to read everything and to join the dots. You know, we all need time to join the dots. So innovation is great. It's everywhere we look. The difficult thing for businesses is to focus their energy in the right direction and just to accept that you can't keep up with everything, you can't know everything that's going on, and we mustn't just keep looking for new stuff. We have to perhaps look to our strengths. Obviously, all these organizations are very good at analyzing their SWOT analysis, to put it quite simply. So they're constantly monitoring that. But I think sometimes, because we're in a time when leaders are under tremendous pressure to deliver, they feel the need to be perhaps coming up with results that it's just impossible to deliver so quickly. And they don't really have a narrative by which they can engage investors, stakeholders, and the board to keep trusting them, to keep going in the direction which they feel in their gut they really should keep going towards. So if you take something like, if you take Agile for HR, for example, just to bring it back to HR for a moment, then HR for Agile and Agile for HR is two different things. Obviously, it's about turning your own HR department into an Agile department, or enabling other departments within your organization and other areas within domains to be agile. So you're supporting them, so you're not getting in their way. For example, you would say you wouldn't start introducing HR policies and systems that were focusing on an individual or on the individual and rewarding the individual if, in fact, what you want to do is to incentivize teams. Yeah, so that's just an example of that. And because Agile really does focus on the team, therefore your HR department needs to be aware of that, and they need to be coming up with some innovation around that. So if you're going towards the transformation, the massive transformation of a business on a global scale, even if you know your local domain really well, you know your local organization really well, as soon as you start to ripple out beyond that into other locations around the world, you have all sorts of issues that are coming at you left, right and center, cultural and so forth, that you really start to lose touch with. And leaders are increasingly, as I say, under pressure to deliver a solution. You know, everyone looks to them, don't they, and sort of say they're in between, if you like. They're in between the delivery and the strategy, and they have to keep coming back and saying, yes, it's okay, we're on track, we're doing what you asked us to do, and we'll be there in a short period of time. In fact, we're going to be there a week on Monday or whatever it is. Well, that's really not possible at the moment. So I think leaders are under tremendous pressure, and HR needs to really work hard, I think, to help relieve some of the tension around that leadership and the turbulence between the delivery and the strategy, which seems to be causing the majority of problems as I see it.
No, and it's interesting, that whole senior leadership piece, clearly depending on the type of organization and the vertical that they operate in. They may have been operating under, I suspect, some severe pressure in the last 12 months, hopefully easing off slightly, or they may in fact have been not operating at all, so dealing with different issues and pieces. I think that whole bit around, you know, more is less, or sticking to your core purpose, really plays through for those organizations that have and will do well, because there's a real danger, as you say, with this innovation piece of things changing so rapidly, you knee-jerk react. And that's not saying they'll never be short-term or opportunities that you shouldn't take advantage of, but you could yo-yo your business, especially if it's a very large one, at the bequest of innovation, rather than sticking to that purpose and principles and plan and strategy that actually have seen you through the long run. So yeah, there must be some real challenges with some of the organizations you work with to stick to principles, to reinforce your purpose, rather than just go after the next big thing.
Yes, I would say that's very much the case. And for purposes of staying sane, I would always recommend a system like OKRs, because that way, and it's so surprising how you'll talk to a really large organization and find that they haven't really communicated their OKRs, whether or not they've even got any in the first place that are actually written down. Yes, of course, they've got vision and mission and all that good stuff, and probably a North Star, but have they really communicated what's in it for me all the way down the line? Because that really does matter. We might be, you know, teams also need to know what's in it for me, because the team also has its own, I believe it has its own identity. And it's just a natural thing for human beings, whether they're working collectively or individually, to compete in some way, you know, isn't it? I mean, we do. We get up in the morning and we don't just accept our lot. We compete. We feel better when we've achieved something. It's really part of the whole well-being picture as well. It's not just about performance for productivity reasons. It's also about well-being. So, yeah, I think if you can communicate, if you can understand your own OKRs and you can communicate them really clearly to your teams and all the way through the organization, if you're thinking about flow and maybe thinking about you know, the whatever your metaphor is for that flow throughout your organization, are your messages the key messages that you are relying on for achieving the outcomes that you're aiming for? Are they getting through? Are the people throughout your organization able to make decisions without referring to a handbook? Are they able to trust their judgment because they know they're in tune with the outcome, the strategic outcomes that you're planning?
And that whole piece around, I suppose, bringing it all together, making sure everybody's pointing in the right direction, and there's something in it at a higher organisational level for every individual, but also their individual plans and performances built into that, so we're all pulling in the right direction. That, if you get it right, must result in a workforce that have a better business performance based on the fact they're kind of bought in at a higher level and a personal level. But that must have a massive impact on society in general, as well as those individual businesses.
Oh, yes, I would definitely hope so, because I think you're probably alluding to happiness and a feeling of well-being and a better society to live in. Is that right, Simon? I mean, are you going down that route with it?
Yeah. So if I'm happy at work, my performance is better. Therefore, that means that my service to customers is better. Therefore, we generate more money. Therefore, the customers are happier. So it's that kind of ever-evolving circle, isn't it?
It is, you know, and doesn't that make sense, really? When you, even if, because I think every domain likes to use loads of jargon, doesn't it? And even if you take all the jargon out that you've ever learned and you just gave it to a child and said, look, just tell me, does this make sense to you? If you're happy all day, are you going to be happier when you're at home? And I think anyone's going to say, yes, I think that's true. And are you, I think the theory, isn't it, that you're, the five people around you are the ones who influence you in your life. And obviously we have different, that those five people change on a regular basis. So if you have five people around you who are happy and positive, I mean, obviously we're not going to be walking around all the time and like pull up a beanbag and happy clappy nation or anything. Of course, there's got to be tension. There's got to be the downside. But I generally mean, in order to progress and in order to innovate, you know, what's the saying? You need to get lost in order to find yourself. And so, yes, you do have to have all the different sort of stops along the way. You have to have a full life. But if you're generally disposed to helping people, collaborating, taking account, being accountable for your actions, not just pointing your finger at someone who's got the unfortunate label of boss or leader on their T-shirt, and instead realizing that actually you have got an input here. You are a valued person that can create an impact for better or worse. So make it better, please. Make it for the better. And we'll all, if we all take that attitude, we'll all have a better day, and then we'll all have a better social environment. I know it sounds really simplistic and it can sound a little bit corny, but it is, I think it's so logical that you can't really get away from it.
No, I agree. And I think for me, there's something coming in the future, which might be a delayed effect from this lockdown that we've all been enduring for the last 12 months or so, around HR teams needing to, maybe in an agile world, let's say, adapt their skill base. We've touched on well-being, mental health at work, and mind, and all those charities have been at the forefront of lots of things during lockdown. I just have a fear that maybe 6, 12, 18 months down the line, we start to really see the true impact on people having to work from home and then get back out and, you know, mix with people socially again, which could be different, mix with people face to face at a work place again, and add into that travel. So I think, or do you see that HR teams will need to be more adaptive moving forward, or maybe bring different skill sets into the workplace, or have more of the same skill set because we've become, I suppose, conditioned to less human contact and working remotely in the last 12 months?
I think that's so interesting, because that's brought up all sorts of dots that need to be connected. And just listening to Dave Ulrich talking about his new book recently on a YouTube interview, his book's called Reinventing the Organization. And although 90% of the conversation was around all the things that you would normally expect an HR expert to talk around, in terms of the focus was on Google case studies and talking about everything from productivity through to well-being. And you'd have thought that really he would have perhaps in the end, especially at the time that we're in, have come down on the, you know, more on the productivity side. But he really came down on the well-being side. And he said that he thought that if, I think, oh, I won't put words in his mouth, but it came over to me anyway, that a very influential speaker and writer and commentator on HR was telling us that really well-being was the number one thing that HR should be thinking about. And I think you've got to get the other stuff right. And probably that's part of the message as well. If you're going to be aiming for, if one of your OKRs is going to be that you're taking care of well-being, it's going to be something around well-being, then quite a lot of the, if that's one of the objectives, then quite a lot of the KRs, I think, are going to be around the other stuff, which we've just been talking around, because you can't just wave a magic wand and say, oh, look, everything's fine. We've taken care of you. We've sent you some materials. We've sent you some furniture. We've made sure you've got a good bandwidth, all those things for working from home. And you'll come into the office 2 days a week and we've got social distancing and all of that is fine. All that's taken care of. These are the practical things. Yes, of course, they need looking after. But I think it's more than that, isn't it? You know, we need a sense of belonging, and that will help us overcome so much of the adverse effects of this pandemic if organizations can focus on building that environment of feeling of belonging for individuals. And actually, that's a really important aspect of agility for teams. So as you probably know, I'm sure you know, but the and this is one of the areas I'm very interested in, inclusion, because if you've got inclusivity, then And we have to remember that we're all in a minority at some stage in our lives, or in some stage of a conversation, or a week, or a day, or a month. We'll find ourselves gravitating towards the people that are like us. It makes us feel more comfortable to do this when we get on a bus, if we're ever allowed to get on one again. And so the natural thing to do is to be with people like yourself. If you are working remotely and you can't really see differences, does this mean that it's easier for human beings to be more inclusive? I think that's a very interesting question. There's a lot of work being done around VR now. And I was reading the other day that I think it was PwC had bought 400 headsets, having spent fortunes, of course, on these amazing offices around the world. Now a lot of their staff can't go in and enjoy them. So they are doing some work with VR. So headsets are being sent out to people so that they can experience these wonderful environments from the, you know, spare bedroom that they've been relegated to in order to do their work all day long. I thought that's fascinating. It's one small part of what we can do to help people to help alleviate some of the pressures of this world we find ourselves in. And don't you think that just those things we've covered there, it's so amazing, Simon, how this pandemic is touching really every area of our lives. And there isn't anything that you can really rule out as being unimportant to address, really.
I agree. And it brings back to me, I kind of miss in my corporate days the kind of coffee chat. So you'd be going to the coffee machine and you'd bump into somebody. And actually, a lot of the work, if that's the right thing to say in quotes, got done there. So not a formal meeting, certainly not a WebEx or video call, but the, oh, hi, how you doing? Oh, you couldn't help me with, oh yeah, no problem, I'll drop it over, or I'll ping you an email. That stuff's been lost. I think Teams, Google Hangouts, Zoom meetings, all fine, tend to be very formal. You're never quite sure if somebody's typing an email, if the camera's on or off, and all that kind of stuff. And the VR was really interesting because I was fortunate enough, quite early in lockdown, for an associate we worked with who was trying that stuff, sent me a headset and kind of gave me a virtual tour of all these different scenarios that had been mocked up. So there was a big auditorium that you could use, and it had things you could pick up and rearrange, whiteboards you could write on. If you went outside, people couldn't hear you and it was only the person you were speaking to. I think if you went under the water, that was completely private. So all amazing things, but actually spending an hour in it, I came off and was pretty tired. And that was, you know, before I'd got through my backlog of emails for the day and all those kind of things. So I think there are absolutely different ways of working we need to embellish, and we have embellished, and will continue to grow and change. I don't think it'll ever be able to replace the fact of being in a room with people, or working in a room with people is where the magic happens. And it's all those bits you can't capture on a Zoom meeting, the looks around the table, the, you know, somebody passing somebody a note with an idea. It's all that stuff that virtually is very difficult in my mind to recreate.
Yes, I think Slack and systems like that have tried to help us approach that interaction less formally, haven't they? And to some extent had some success. But obviously the organisation has been very successful, but I mean in terms of the actual impact on your daily life. I don't know, do you use something like Slack? Do you use anything that makes it less formal? And
we use Hayspace every now and again, yeah. Which is the same yes. General setup.
And how's that? Does it really work for you, or are you still in the water cooler?
It's okay. Yeah. It's the best that we can get to probably at that time. It's interesting, and you talked about gravitating to people that you are similar to again, which I've been reading or read recently the book by Matthew Syed, Rebel Ideas. And that's around the whole diverse thinking thing. So actually surrounding yourself with people that don't necessarily think the same as you, and not seeing it as naysayers or people that are disruptive, but actually creating a better solution by people coming at it from different angles. And again, I think probably quite difficult to do that in the current climate with Zoom meetings and things, because there's more of a formal agenda and way of working it through.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to think, just to explore your thoughts there around the clunkiness, perhaps, of and the formality of using some of the things we've come to rely on for just everyday work? Well, certainly I have, and my team has, Zoom and Teams and things like that. But if you think, well, I wonder if wearables could overcome some of the clunky issues that we have, that could suddenly revolutionize these less formal spaces and allow us to feel, I mean, who knows, you might be able to sort of have some form of wearable where suddenly you have a hologram in front of you and you're having a conversation with somebody, hey presto, right in front of the water cooler. I don't know. These things will only occur to people as we are pushed more and more into the corner, won't they? And we're feeling more and more sort of isolated, and we'll need that. We've got to invent it. We've got to invent it and make it happen. Because I don't really see if the statistics around the way the world has changed for good are true, and 70% of people will be working at home at least, or remotely at least 3 days out of five, or you know, a large proportion of their working week, then. You know, we can't continue, can we? I can't imagine a situation where we could continue as a human race without that interaction, which you've just talked about, because that's our natural go-to way of really making deeper relationships, deeper friendships. Although I have to say, I've made some great working relationships over the last year and I haven't even met the people in person. I don't know about yourself.
Sure. Yeah, I've spoken to, we've got new clients that we've worked with, we've never met physically. There's people, organisations we work with that have had new starters and they've been inducted at home, you know, worked there probably six, eight, 12 months now and never physically met the team of people they work in. And is it ideal? Probably not. But actually, if they made it work, yeah, they have. And it's been, you know, a success all round, from the way they've adapted their recruitment policy to do it, to the way they've made those people feel part of something wider than sitting at home in front of a screen. And a credit to those individuals for, you know, buying into that and moving it forward. But to a person, they all say, I can't wait for the day when we can have a physical team meeting.
Yeah, I think we all are yearning for that. Bring it on, I think. Hopefully it's going to be very soon, isn't it?
Yep, fingers crossed. Well, on that positive note then, let's pause there. It's been a pleasure to chat. And if people want to find out more about the Shine Project, just want to get in touch with you for a general chat or further stuff, where's the best place for them to reach out?
Oh, please go to Carolyn Mumby on LinkedIn, because that's where I spend quite a lot of my day these days. So it would be great if people did reach out to me through LinkedIn.
Brilliant. And we'll put a link on the show notes when this one goes out. It's been a pleasure to learn about you, some of the projects you've been working on, and chat. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much, Simon. It's been an absolute pleasure.